Well, hi. Yeah, we'd like to get started. This is the team from Radio Volta and WPEB, also the Philadelphia Independent Media Center, that has been working on a Hacking for Community Radio project. We're basically trying to develop some software that will make a lot of things possible for community radio that weren't possible before. My name is Pete Tredish, and I'm from the Prometheus Radio Project and also from Radio Volta. We've got Josh from Philly IMC. Actually, everyone is from Philly IMC. Josh Marcus and Dave Ernie and Christina Clare. Oh, wow.
We're really fancy.
And we want to tell you about a project we've been working on over the course of the past year or two. Just a little bit of background about the project. Outside of the software project, Radio Volta is an internet-only radio station that was started during the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia. It rose from the ashes of Radio Mutiny, which was the pirate radio station that was confiscated by the FCC about 4 years ago now. A bunch of the staff of Radio Mutiny plus the Independent Media Center people came together to put together this internet station because we knew the whole world would be watching Philadelphia while the Republicans came to sully our city for a few days in the year 2000. We had such a good time putting on Radio Volta, the temporary station, that we decided to just keep it going, even though the main audiences that we wanted to reach were people that didn't have computers, people that didn't listen to web radio. We decided we were going to find a way to do community radio and make internet radio into community radio. So we got the station going as an internet station, and then we got into an arrangement with a local community station, WPEB, which was a station that was almost about to go bankrupt. A station with a 25, and it was having, you know, financial problems. And so we cut and they had a really, which, as it turns out, it's a lot to learn as a pirate to broadcast on FM. Than it is, and a lot to put up a pirate station, $500, $800. It's a lot easier and cheaper to broadcast get a single audience from place to place with high enough quality for FM. And regular radio stations spend $15,000 microwave length. And that was going to be WPEB was not going to be able to do anymore. They had to from its original site and separate the studio into in order to meet the FCC's. So Radio Volta, in exchange for having some of our program go out over the FM, we were going to develop software. That could pull streaming that was good enough for FM broadcast. It could be used as a studio transmitter link with a few cheats without investing in the $15,000 in commercial quality. So I came to this. I am this much of a nerd, and I made this decision about 5 years ago that I was not computers. I was just going to learn radio. And I have friends that knew how to. But I have to say that in the course of if you use Microsoft Windows computing, getting your news from ABC or NBC or the corporate. When it comes down to it, the easy solution. I'll take the easy solution or buggy from Windows. And we need to be able to customize something that would be the right thing to do. We didn't was capable of streaming from one place to have the Radio Volta studio both able, the studio both able to reliably and to the transmitter site and to be able to broadcast from there. So that is the nature of the challenge faced when we started. And I'll just turn it over to you guys.
Okay. So, the project in general, folks and I were getting reading on reliably on the air at 80.1 FM. A project, very much. Yeah. The project is trying to develop an open source software package solution to get community radio on the air. So we begin by talking about the whole idea of the studio transmitting and also why it's important. Often very important because the transmitter keeps the same location, especially under the low power FM rules. That seems like it's very often the case. At first, easy problem that will do that are out there that will do this, right? You download audio encoder program you use, and you download audio, and you can listen to it. And then there's also all sorts of stuff. You put it on the internet directly if you want to do that directly. It turns out that that's a little bit deceptively simple. All of the pieces of that puzzle end up being rather undue. And we've gone through a lot of trials trying to find pieces that are. Another factor in that is cost. We had very, very little money to start with, and
no money.
And when we began, we were using dial-up modems, and the technical aspect of setting it up and the stages we went through. You could spend many thousands of dollars on a commercial thing, or even reasonable connectivity, becomes more and more difficult. Obstacles like the need to use a satellite happened with another station we'll talk about.
So the initial quality audio from place to place using a dial-up and have it be reliable enough to air for 30 off the air for 30. Let's see.
Okay, so the slide here is about the very far from, and the plan was a solution to get a community radio transmitter link on the air, something that was easily installable. So we're thinking like CD or Linux, something like that. Both the encoder computer and the decoder computer. You have one computer that's connected directly to the studio, connected to where to. And you want the software to manage both. So scheduling, so they'll schedule different pieces of audio and different shows as it goes on. Other pieces of that, manage the network because say the studio is on the DSL for other things, control the bandwidth usage. So we want the software to do some network, something that people can actually use.
Yeah, you can send to somebody, put it in their drive, and they can put it in their drive, boot it up, and have a studio that works. Things kind of go floppy or something, but. We can know tonight.
Where we begin the proselytizing section, others on this project really need help on this project
so we don't get called in the middle.
And it's a really a lot of reasons. An interesting story when Radio Volta was just beginning was during the last Hope conference was previous. In fact, Jella Biafra, who spoke here at length about the need for people to get involved in technical powers for good, one of our first. Personally, I've thought long and hard sort of the hacker maxim, information wants to be free, that mean in sort of a practical sense. And this is a very practical fact. We're asked to give the means to use it, communities that want to use it.
And maybe you don't like the way that the media is now, but you run a radio show or go interview people or things. But you can do what you're doing, some code that'll really, you can spend an afternoon writing a script for somebody, and it's something they could never do on their own, build their lives, and they.
And then another thing Dylan talked about earlier, like a lot of radio stations want to get started, but they have the various software. Like I think a lot of kind of community organizations use is open source software, and it's good to be able to go in and help them get their feet doing
it. I found a lot of places where I think to start, no idea where to start. So we can show up with some CDs, tell them how to use it, and leave them, and hopefully they won't call us. Another goal is you want to stream audio, and you've got a transmitter somewhere that you want to get to, and you don't want it to be traceable back, or you want to stream on the web, you want it to be traceable. Problem. It's an interesting problem. I don't think it's quite.
Right. So, an idea has been floating here that if the legal and publishing opens up the possibility of all sorts of places all rebroadcast that content signal, whether they be pirate stations, RFM stations, or pirate stations. So while Twitter might get off that project, it's actually, in the project that's actually producing content won't get. An SDL is a super transmitter link is an interesting way, but you need it to be flexible, and you might have to deal with what you have. You probably have to if you have a pirate. There are some interesting possibilities, which are sort of directions that went up on. For example, there is a bunch of people have been talking about the concept called OpenDJ, which is a peer-to-peer system which you can use to own your own show and have people. The audio content actually comes from another into it. And actually, if you go to the page, which is OpenDJ, we're discussing some of the same issues we're discussing here, which is that, as we said, it's very hard to keep up. And this system is designed to make it really easy for people to have a show, and so integrate that in some meaningful way into this.
Here's some information on Radio Volta, and Pete went over, but that's the little plug. You can listen to our stream there. Also, gb.org stream there.
So this is the we have one obstacle that we had to face, with the Volta station combining two projects. One is Radio Volta, media-based radio internet project in WP, which had its own studio and was base station. Which is that we need additional concern, which is that we need to switch from one other to another, and we need to do that on a schedule. This had your own, you might want to do, say, if you had your own transmitter and maybe you burned parts of the night, but for the rest of the time you want to draw on a tremendous amount of great content on the internet. So it's just in, it goes to WPB and it goes over to FL here, and then the transmitter.
I'll just point out too that one of the big problems that we had originally was that had the money at the moment to pay for DSL for them. They were on the other side of the digital divide. They were not served by DSL yet. And it, one that's a lot of time on was dealing with the low bandwidth issues, precisely because it's not to want a transmitter or phone company's choice that the phone companies choose not to serve with applications. And the other problem that we built in where we use the same system, the only place that the FCC would allow us to put the transmitter and have a legal station was across the Chesapeake Bay. And snuck our way a town across the bay by siting the transmitter someplace that was far away from. We were able to enter cities that we were able to get the permit for them. Definitely no other form of connectivity there. And what we ended up using, a bizarre twist of fate, was a satellite connection out there. We are still stunned that it's actually.
There wasn't even a dial-up ISP that was a local phone.
Quite amazed that restrictions were so intense that for them to be able to their signal 10 miles across the Chesapeake Bay, necessary the satellite, whoever the satellite company is, maybe from face to face, get the signal.
It made for some interesting ping times and latency.
That was one of the a motivating factor while we're trying to deal with the management of the single is that the latency were like seconds for a packet to get from one place to another, and that made all the players bear.
Here's the Radio Volta. We don't really think close and have good vision, but probably not. A lot of pieces, they're all, it's just that there's a lot of pieces, they're all interconnected, so there's lots of RAM.
So maybe I'll just talk a little bit about what the pieces of the puzzle are and the technical history. When we first started on the project, we had the two Volta site, and there was the transmitter. And the question was, how do we get the signal and how do we do the switch? Activity was a real one because one of the studio sites, we couldn't get DSL, also we didn't have the money. So we had three dial-ups in all those locations. The first thing was live, of course, MP3 stream. We found, and what we discovered was that it was very unreliable. It would die all the time, And another that where wouldn't function under, we couldn't broadcast under very, very low bit rate. It just wouldn't work. Over a modem, it just wouldn't broadcast MP3. Forced at a certain different kinds of solution, having to go, we ended up actually having to go with real audio. And this is this is where it rile you up and down. We had the proprietary solution to the proprietary solution, which is very upsetting. This is what we call the codec travesty. We use MP3. We found out that, and it turns out that they're just really not very similar. That
this is the part where you should change, because we're saying MP3 sucks.
Mixer was built to deal with, was built a long time ago, and was built to deal with low bit rates. Software, and it turns out that there is better software than LiveVice. There's software called DarkVice, which works relatively well, and there's also an XMMS plugin that's very easy to use.
What about Shoutcast?
Shoutcast, we ended up not using Shoutcast, and it's possible that Shoutcast works well under low bitrate solutions, and if that's true, then we should look into that and we should use that. I haven't personally tried Shoutcast with the modem.
Yeah, there's also a command line script you can use that I've used in the past, FreeStream, and that works. You know, it's a Perl script that takes MP3 data on standard input and then sends it to an Icecast server. But again, it had good connectivity when we used it. So,
Bernie?
So if you can hear,
if you have comments, please come up, use the mic. I'll turn the mic in the back on as well, so the chairman is the closest to you, so everyone could hear, so it will get on tape posterity.
In order to try and draw you in and incite your help on the matter, we have brought candy, which we wish to throw to people who have offered suggestions. So if you two would like candy, it wouldn't mind, we're going to throw you some candy. So.
Watch out.
If you don't answer questions, we will hit you with candy.
I'm looking forward to the candy. IRLP, which is the Internet Radio Linking Project, it's being done by the amateur radio community. It's a card and Linux and transmitter control through DTMF signals. Through my my HT, I can dial up four numbers and be anywhere else in the world on a local transmitter.
Oh, cool.
Their site is irlp.net.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
and I think that I think he charges about $100 Canadian for the card and a version of Linux, which you can toss out. Wow. It's at the bit rate's 8,000, but I'm sure it can be expanded. And that is straight modulate, demodulate, audio, digital audio. IRLP.net, India, Romeo, Lima, Papa.net.
Just for, if you're wondering, by low bit rates, we mean like 16, 24 kbps, something like that.
Another interesting fact about the MP3 and real audio is that real audio sounds pretty good at 16k or 20k. I mean, like, audio files tell me it sounds horrible, but for us, it seemed okay, you know? You could listen to it on the radio. There was other distortion, and so the one distortion to us seemed like it canceled out the other distortion and made it what we called warm. But that certainly continues to be a disappointment for us. And dealing with a real producer has meant that we've had to deal with their player, which has its own little GUI and isn't really designed to be integrated into like a Unix application.
Yeah, 128K MP3 sounds great, you know, but we can't stream that, unfortunately.
We have one additional candy challenge here at the moment. Another issue we have is that we're using random commercial home connectivity just because there's not a lot of money. Or maybe we're using our 802.11 link and it goes up and down. And one question we have is, how can we actually monitor the effective bit rate of a connection. It seems like there's software out there, but so if anyone has a solution as to how to best do that, we also were interested in perhaps switching, like having more than one type of connectivity at a time, like having a dial-up and having a DSL, so that, because we don't want to go down at any point, and the reliability is kind of crucial.
Yeah, there's two catches. One catch is that, first catch, we don't want to find bandwidth by transferring large files and see how long it takes because our stream will go down. Second catch is that when we switch sources, we don't want the stream to go down. So, any suggestions?
I have multiple questions in there. Switching sources and wanting to...
Actually, could you come up to the mic, please?
I just wanted to mention that I'm part of running the network at the New York IMC, and that recently I set something up where we're able to monitor the bandwidth through the firewall that we set up, and all the streaming does go through that firewall. And we did it with the accounting features of a program called IP Filter, which is what we use for our packet filtering, and we were able to produce a nice graph that lets us see the bandwidth utilization as we stream.
Cool.
And we're also able to use... some quality of service tools like AltQ and DummyNet to limit the bandwidth of other machines so that they don't take over the link.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to throw out also just the thing of there's ISDN, which is available in a lot of places where DSL isn't. And with data over voice, where you don't pay per minute charges to the phone company, you can still get 112K, and it's pretty reliable. So you could, you know, depending on encapsulation overhead, you could get 64K MP3 or maybe even more. And short of that, you can do channel bonding with modems also. You can have multiple modems dialed into the same place and bond those channels.
Yeah, we actually head towards channel bonding with modems when DSL became available. So.
Also with ISDN, there is... I don't know if you said that you're using a satellite connection. Is that for TCP/IP traffic, or one thing that's used commonly in radio is to use an ISD connection with a hardware codec to send your signal up to the satellite and send it to other radio stations. And those hardware codecs are really quite good, and they run over a single twisted pair, dual channel. 112K, and the quality is quite good. Pacifica Radio uses it to distribute their programming, Democracy Now, that sort of thing.
Yeah, one thing we've heard about the hardware codecs is that they don't work well for 24/7 operation, and they also, a few $1,000, which I guess isn't too bad.
They're very pricey, and it's, that is a disincentive. The other comment I wanted to make was that the switching of the sources, you're switching. You have two different locations sending into one LiveEye server. Is that how you're doing it?
Right now we were doing that. Now we've been forced to use the real audio solution. But we are using a LiveEye server. IFAS server is a. You can. What's the way to do it? If we have two streams going into one IFAS server.
My experience with that tells me that you have to bring one down before you bring the other one up. I believe that IceCast has, you can configure it so that it doesn't drop listeners during that period. There is a little bit of a problem with the prior build, not IceCast 2, but the one that everybody's been using for years, the next connection. There's something about overriding the default. As long as you're using mount points and you're using LiveEye or DarkEye to send to a mount point, you should be okay. I think there's also IceCast 2 has a feature where it can play something between sources. You point it at a directory and it starts playing MP3 files from there. I haven't looked at it in a long time, and I might be confusing it with another server like Shoutcast, but you might want to look at that. So it takes coordination to... the other way to do it is to send those two sources into one computer, generate an audio feed, and re-encode that, but that gets messy because then you start ending up with artifacts from compression.
That's pretty interesting. Because the switching has been a real issue of concern, and also it seems like it should be much easier than any solutions we found. But I mean, if we had sort of these flow demons, which we've envisioned living on these computers, then they could communicate back and forth and coordinate switch offs, which would also be good for timing. So maybe we should go in that direction, though it's slightly more complicated than I would hope. But
I was going to mention that Comrix has come out with a new hardware codec for plain old telephone service, just dial-up. And I had to laugh when they came out with the product because they called it the Blue Box, and it's in a blue box. And the pair is only about $3,000, so it's a fairly reasonable price solution, I would think. And one of the commercial stations I take care of is considering it for a backup. They wound up being, it's not a big one of these big commercial chains like Clear Channel. It's a little mom-pa station. And they couldn't do an RF STL because there's a mountain in the way between the studio and the transmitter side. So we went with ISDN on that. But the trouble is, every once in a while, the ISDN just dies, and they're off the air. So we're going to put in one of these as a backup system. But even for a community station, it might work. But you still have the problem of leaving the dial-up connection up all the time, which phone companies really don't like.
That was actually one of the things we looked at. We contacted Comrex, and they're an awful nice sounding bunch, and I've heard a lot of people like their products. But when we asked them, when we said that we wanted to use it for a studio transmitter link, what they told us was, we think that we're suitable for a backup, but we don't feel, and we feel like our they said that they felt like their products were built tough enough to run 24/7, and that they wouldn't overheat, and they wouldn't do all that sort of thing, but it really wasn't what they designed them for, and they had a lot of concerns about line quality. And the example that the woman there gave me was, you know, especially for their plain old telephone line box, is that that line, it's going to be sitting in the sun all day, and you know there's the two ends of the pair are going to have to renegotiate, and you're going to end up every time the line gets a little shorter or a little longer electrically, you'll end up with a situation where you'll just have dropouts. And so they couldn't recommend it as a solution. Not that they discouraged us from trying it, but they couldn't recommend it.
Yeah, buffering is another question that we should keep open. Okay. Yeah, we've been playing with wireless, and everybody's been asking us about this antenna. So a lot of you have probably heard about it. So we thought we'd put some pictures up and just say that wireless is spiffy and keen. And here's our antenna and its housing pointing across Philadelphia. And that's actually worked pretty well. It gets us, you know, lots of speed, and we're looking forward to trying it as a 24/7 kind of solution. About 2 miles, mile and a half, 2 miles. It's an 18 dB gain antenna. We're using Cisco 100 milliwatt stuff on both ends. 802.11b. So this is the station that we use the satellite with, and like we were saying, the satellite was fun.
One issue that came up with the satellite link is that, so like we said before, the latency was huge, and so again we tried using RealPlayer. And Real Producer, because it could deal with the blackouts really well. Like MP3, you get periods of silence, and the Real Player will degrade the signal badly, but it will kind of keep slogging through. And we came up with this, some weird Linux-y type questions that if people have ideas about, they'd be appreciated. You can come talk to us or whatever. But the problem is we have to use the gooey little Real Player application, and when it loses the signal, that the application doesn't die, it just stops. And so the question arose, how do we watch that? How do we restart it? And it turns out that we could watch the number of children processes, and if it dropped to 5, we knew it wasn't playing, and if it was at 7, it was playing. But this seems like a kind of a random way to keep track of the application. So if people have ideas about how to manage sort of an application that's designed for GUI, I'd love to hear it, maybe in person.
So Flow is our studio transmitter link software project. Which is a collection of Perl scripts that basically keep RealPlayer up and going, and it's been working reasonably well.
Yeah, this is just a quick overview of the code base. It's a Perl application. It's not real. It's not really involved. It's an easy thing for someone to jump into and get involved with. The eventual goal is the sort of turnkey solution that we discussed in the beginning. Right now, what it is it's a daemon. It runs on the transmitter computer. For the encoder computers, we've just been using other tools to keep the player going. We use a software package called Daemon Tools, which is written by Daniel Bernstein. And there's a program called Supervise, and it keeps the daemon up. We were talking earlier with the New York IMC, who has a Perl script that they run on the cron tab that keeps their player going. And they and also they keep XMMS going, because apparently XMMS will die after a whole bunch of hours. And one thing you find is all these software packages that seem to work really well work somewhat less well after 12 hours. Or over time, and they're reliable, but they're not really designed for production. The software here, it's kind of simple. There's a communicator, little object. It's like an object-oriented Perl thing. The daemon listens at a particular port, and where it receives commands to switch the signal from one way to another. And we have a little CGI page that you can go to, and you can switch the signal from one station to the other. We also set up a little cron tab that at a certain time will automatically send the signal to switch it. And then we have a process manager that just sort of spawns little child processes to actually run whatever the player is, whether it's like MPG123 or XMMS or the real play. And we haven't done Aux Corbis. We haven't really tested that. And then there's a little monitor object that checks to make sure the stream is up and checks to make sure the connection is up. Because basically you need to keep checking to make sure that the stream is up, and if the stream goes down, then you know that once the stream goes back up on the other side, you need to restart the player. There is some future. The future code is not too much more involved. We'd like to integrate a scheduler, which is one of the things that almost all radio stations need, and something that can be configurable externally from a web page, so that you could. You know, from wherever you are, you could set up your station to broadcast different streams, and often community radio stations, like in our experience, when big events happen or something exciting is going on, you might want to pick up what microradio.net has been calling these emergency community broadcasts, where there's intensive coverage of something going on somewhere else, and so it's fun to broadcast that on your own station. We also like to make a little GUI, so that people can actually configure it, and there is like now you have to configure it by editing a little configuration file, which is fine if you're kind of Linux handy, but it's really arcane if you're not. So.
Yep. I just have a question.
Yep.
Yeah, so the question was, how do we get the sound from the computer to the transmitter? It actually goes out of the sound card, goes through an audio processor, which does some compression and limiting, and at some point we add pre-emphasis, but I'm not sure if that's in the transmitter or the processor right now. But yeah, essentially it just goes out of the sound card into the transmitter. Yeah, for compression, we're actually not using software compression right now. We've got like an Optimod audio processor.
But that's actually a question that has plagued me for a long time, which is how to do effective software compression and limiting, which are basically just like dynamic signal processing things, ways you want to treat the sound before it goes out. And like recently, I played a little bit with PD and JMAX, which are digital sound processing applications for Linux, but didn't really seem like the right thing. And I'm also not particularly clear about how to take a signal in from sound card, process it, and then feed it to a program like Real Producer that expects to find the sound signal at DevDSP, the standard Linux place. Can you comment on doing software compression and limiting?
I just stumbled across JMAX, and the project that came out of, whose name is slipping me right now, but it seems like they've got this fairly comprehensive project now that covers a lot of things, including compression and limiting and expansion and We haven't installed it and taken a look at it yet, but we're pretty excited about it because, you know, we've got a bunch of, you know, dumpster dive computers, but we don't have money really for, you know, buying a nice rack mount compressor. So we're kind of hopeful that there will be something in that direction. I think I also saw a project on SourceForge, which is a kind of a loopback device for /dev/DSP. So there is the possibility of having it, you know, loop through a couple of times. I think you need enough of a, you know, enough megahertz in order to power that. But it seems like we're getting to the point where that may be possible one day soon, if it's not possible right now. I added a couple of other comments, my friends, too. We were wondering if you've ever just tried MPEG 1-2-3 as a player, because you have a little bit better control of the command line.
I have great animosity towards MPG 1-2-3. It was really kind of unreliable. It did a couple things, and I think it might have had to do just because it wasn't so happy about the IFCast, but I had experiences where it would misfire, and it would pick up, it would like decide it was at the wrong bit rate. It would also die on me at certain points. So I found MPG 1-2-3 unreliable in a couple different ways. And what I ended up having to do, when you see like in the Perl, we had to open up MPG 1-2-3 and read what it was producing on standard out, and then like read what it would read what it said it was doing and make sure that was actually what it was doing. So I'm kind of disappointed with that. And XMMS, it seems better and more reliable, but then it's hard because I can't read from the GUI interface. So this is I want to put out a call. Maybe making a codec is something. Maybe an open source codec is a very difficult project. So it's a little bit much to make a call for someone to do that. Though that would be great, but not realistic. But
we'll give you candy. We'll
give you lots of candy. But someone hacking MPG 1-2-3 or XMMS to do a little bit better buffering, or to integrate some of the, just make it more reliable for production, is not such a huge project and something we would love to see.
Yeah. About the software compression and audio processing, we've been told that if we can come up with a product, we can start a company and sell it for thousands of dollars, like by many different people.
You really could. There's a huge demand for it, and it's never been satisfied. So, one more comment, which is with Daemon Tools, I've never had a look at that, but it sounds like it's doing what our Perl script for XMMS does. It gives you tools for doing various things like that. And I was wondering if perhaps it has, or maybe just like a plain old, you know, Perl server script could handle your two sources by, accepting socket connections, you know, perhaps on, you know, 8020 and 8021 for the two streams. And then it would just sort of mitigate which one is scheduled to be the correct stream at that time and generate a third outbound stream, you know, just on the local machine that's doing the playing or is doing the encoding, actually. It seems like it wouldn't be that difficult.
That seems like kind of what I first thought we would be able to do. The problem is that we have to use these players. So maybe we could do with MPG 1-2-3 or something, like take in the MP3, they take in the two MPG streams and then produce one out. I don't quite know how to do all the redirecting of the loopback software we're talking about, where you can sort of create these imaginary sound cards and type things in through one and out through another, or something like PD might be the way we could do that. For something like real play, it's a lot harder because you need to actually run these two little applications. We don't have access to the library code, so we have to run the real play player. And so, I mean, if we could create an imaginary sound card, then maybe you could play into that, but I can't do it.
Yeah, we're starting to run a little low on time, so why don't we plan on going and getting some beer tonight, whoever wants to talk about this, and we'll cram as many more of these slides down your throats as we can.
We'll bring the camera.
Yeah, one comment is, as it's shown, these are issues that we're really thinking about, and we're learning as we're going. And there's some things that are kind of exciting that we just discovered, like the PD software, which is short for pure data, which is basically, and people that do computer music know all about these things, but we're just learning about them now. And we basically are like it's a graphical thing that represents sort of like the audio components that you plug together to do different sorts of effects. So, you know, it's a fun research project. So if you want to, Hannah is sitting over there at that table. And if you want to, you can just come talk to us, but also just give us your email address if you'd be interested in just getting email about the ongoing project.
Now, I'm sorry, a quick note about GMAX. Basically, one of the developers of that software is a fairly good friend of mine. And unfortunately, because he's a member of an art collective, they are actually aiming that software at a little bit different market. They're aiming at the musicians or the new media artists, I guess. So it's, well, its main problem is that it's Java.
Yeah.
And as a result, I doubt that it's really broadcast quality or as good as it's not really something that can, at the moment, be up for 24/7 for at least a couple of weeks without interruption, especially under Linux for some reason. Well,
yeah.
Hopefully in the next little while, but not yet.
Yeah. When real-time Java for Linux becomes better.
That makes a lot. That's very, very true. PD is something based off of Max, which is what JMax is based off of. And PD seems a little more practical for use, but I don't know if it's really up to the production quality yet either. But PD seems like the way to go as opposed to JMax, or if someone knows how to actually do the coding.
Sorry, can't hear you at all. Could you walk up to the mic kindly, please?
He was just commenting that MSP is a commercial alternative to Mac, mm-hmm. JMax, that comes out of the same project and people. So we have some quick slides. So if you know some Perl and you want to get involved, there are all sorts of small little projects that you can do that would be very, very helpful. And so, for example, here is a happy little Perl slide, and you know, this line here is where we open the command, would be the command to start a player, and there's a little pipe at the end, and that means that that file handle, you can read from that file handle, and you can get whatever it's pumping out. So, for example, if we were opening MPG-123, we could read the lines coming from MPG-123 and make sure that it says that it thinks the stream is the bitrate it really is. So if you download our software from flow-stl.sourceforge.net, you'll see that in the process manager. And it's not a lot of code, so you could get in and take a look at it and understand it effectively. here's a scary... this is a scary code slide, but it's actually not that scary. It's just takes that file handle. It means that if you try and read from it, it won't wait there forever. It makes a non-blocking socket. That's the scariest thing in the whole code. And now that you've seen it, you don't have to be scared by it. So, there's a happy kitten. See, there's some bunch of Perl questions that are interesting to me and I don't quite have the answers to. So, for example, we're doing to watch to make sure that the players are actually going. We do some sort of brute force process checking, and there might be better ways to do it, and there's certainly more portable ways of doing it, since I doubt that this would work on FreeBSD, and it certainly wouldn't work under Windows, and we've had people really would like it to work under Windows, though we don't really care. So, for example, if you want to see if a process is there, we just look in the proc file system. Under Linux, there's a directory, and that directory has informational files about each process, and we actually check those. And I don't think that's the best way to do it, but that's how we've been doing it. And then there's the weird issue of like seeing whether, like we commented before, about seeing whether the real play player is actually playing. I can't make my Perl script look at the GUI, so we have to run things like real play in a X virtual buffer, which is sort of like an imaginary graphical interface. Not imaginary, but you just don't actually see it. And so we actually have to look at the number of real play processes. So lots of fun little projects, and if people have like a higher level suggestion, that would be great.
Yeah, my suggestion is, how come you don't have just like, you know, to see if the player is playing? Obviously, the person at the studio that's transmitting, they can have a way of detecting the power level. And if it's not transmitting, they can really quick SSH into the remote machine and restart the player again. Why don't you just do that?
Essentially.
Well, you could train them to be able to quickly. I mean, it takes 2 seconds.
Well,
sure, you.
No, I mean that's actually a really good suggestion, and we have a web page where they can click restart, and it will restart the player. So that is a good suggestion. On the other hand, that we can't really rely on. We want it to work reliably, and we can't count on them always being there. We don't want to have a human or train a monkey to do it. We'd like it to actually work. But that is a really good suggestion, and we did do that.
Couldn't you just pipe the audio stream into an input and check the decibel level? And if the decibel level reaches zero for like 3 seconds, just restart the player?
If you could write us a little tiny thing that did that, then I'll buy you a bottle of wine. So just do it and then send it to me. And
right.
Because it seems like we should be able to do that. It should be really simple, and I just don't know how to do it. So if anyone can do that in this room, we will laud your praises.
All right.
Sign up over here.
let's get that. Here's an exciting zombie picture. Because, again, talking about process management, see if a process dies. Say you're playing MPG-123 and it dies. It becomes what's called a zombie process. It lives on, but it's not doing anything. But because it's spawned off of another process, it exists. And so we actually parse this file to see whether it has the word zombie in it. And there must be a better way of doing it.
No, I just learned something recently. That there's a way that when you like open a pipe with a command, there's something that you can pass the pipe that tells it to kill any zombie processes that like it finds, and it will monitor it and like kill them off. I'll have to look that up when I get back.
And this is a quick slide about external monitoring, other things software does. It just like goes, you know, if it's an MPG stream, it will just, you know, go to port 8000 and send a get command and check to see whether it gets back the IC200 okay, which shows it's fine, or it says it's not found. And for real player, it does something similar. And so we need to add support for Augs Vorbis and that sort of thing, and I bet that's not too hard for someone to add. Okay, so we're wrapping it up. I guess we should just end now with a final call for whoever wants to get involved. Please come give us your email address. It's really a great project. I've been doing volunteer technical work for a couple of years now, and it's been really rewarding and a great way to use like my technical ability in a kind of practical and interesting and rewarding way. So I urge you to get involved.
We also have a listserv called Flow? No, stl@philiimc.org. And that's where we do like some of the principal work of throwing out these sorts of questions, not only with the Flow, but also with 802.11 and all the different solutions that we've tried over the years. So that's about it. Thank you very much.
We do have excess candy.